Accession number 31693, reel 20.
Mr. Robson, reel 20. You would again talk about new drafts.
Yeah, we take them out, teach them the ropes, how to behave in the jungle. And I can always remember we were crossing an open ground. And again, open ground, you've got to be careful. Ideal. And of course, being a signaller makes you more aware as well, because the two targets what people try and a sniper will hit is your platoon commander or your patrol commander and your signaller. And anyway, we're crossing this open ground, and as I said before, you're watching, you're looking all the time, you're looking at the guy in front, guy behind. And I looked behind, and this new guy in the draft was so close to me, it was unbelievable. And I said, and he was pointing his rifle at me as well, you know. And of course, we all know what happens in, because although it was a training, it was still live ammunition. And you can't shout at them, you know, because as I said, the sound carries. And I said to him, get back and don't point the rifle at me. I said, I'm still a bit nervous of people, especially new guys, who, because new guys have a tendency to flip the safety catch off, you know, when they walk. So anyway, we got through it. So at the end of the exercise, or the end of the training period, we're out in the jungle, the rains had come. And we'd had rain for the last, I think, 2 days. And when you get rain in the tropics, in Borneo, it comes down in steroids. So, anyway, we packed up the camp, and we were making our way back to the back to the helicopter dropping zone where it would be picked up. Got to the river that we had to cross. We managed to make it across. Just the water was up to chest and neck height. Fortunately, it wasn't very wide. It was only, I would say, about 6 or 7 yards wide. So that wasn't too bad. So we managed to get across this river. However, we get to our next crossing point to get across, to go to the crossing zone to for the helicopter pickup point. We couldn't get across. Not only that, but the rain was so fierce that we couldn't get picked up by helicopter. So we had to make our way to a little kampong, a little village. Longhouse is what they're called. Where there's various longhouses. We get there and we were to be picked up. And at that time I used to smoke. And I always used to keep a couple of cigarettes back. And I used to have them in a little tin where we used to have three very lights, which used to be fired by 1.5-inch very flares. And of course, when I got across, the water got into my little tin, and I didn't have any cigarettes left. So my two cigarettes were too soggy mass. But remember what I said about I had money in my pocket. That was all right. For some reason, I had this money, and we get to the longhouses, and they had cigarettes, and they were called Indian Chief, and it had an Indian Chief on the front, and I couldn't believe it when I looked at the packet, and it was made by WD and H.O. Wills. But so from a patrol we were supposed to be out for about 4 or 5 days, or 6 days it was, We ended up, we had to go into our reserve pack rations, so we were out for an extra 2 days, and eventually we got back to Ballyringan, where I think that was it. Yeah, it was Ballyringan, and that's where Battalion Headquarters, not Coat of Blood, Ballyringan, and we actually got back there. And I thoroughly enjoyed the 6, 7, 8 days that we had, and I volunteered for the next patrol, and which I did. I did another one.
An enormous amount of discomfort. I mean, you described moving around in rain. You must have been absolutely soaked to the skin for hours.
You got used to it. Yeah. You got used to it. You'd have your jungle cap on, and the water would, and you had a brim on it. And the brim was never up because the amount of water that was coming down. But funny enough, it was refreshing. Yeah. This water coming down. On a night time, you know, you just dried yourself up, hung stuff up. But even when it wasn't, you were still wet anyway. And it was just one of those days, you know, but I did enjoy it.
Did you get regular medical checks and to ensure that your health was...
You were trained to look after yourself anyway. Look after your feet, round it, and you always had foot and body powder on a night time when you dried yourself off. Obviously, around your scrotum, you make sure that when you dried off, you actually put the foot and body powder on your feet. Always make sure that. I mean, I saw some people. I'm not saying that they didn't look after themselves, but because not everybody is built the same. Some people had terrible feet. Some people had heat rashes, body rashes, and I was fortunate. I never caught any sort of rash of any sort. But I also made sure that as soon as you got back in camp from patrol, the first thing you did after reporting back was go and you clean your weapon. Handed all your radio equipment in, and then you went to the shower. And the first thing you did was have a shower. And while you're having the shower, you washed your gear as well. So your soap, you would wash your shirts, your underpants, your trousers, your socks, your jungle boots. But the jungle boots didn't last long either. It might last you a couple of patrols. And then they would rot because of the sweat and everything else. So that was that patrol. And I also did a day patrol where we had a reporter come over from the Southern Echo and the Southern Echo and the Northern Echo. And they took a photograph of us. It was a bit cheesy, but I did that with one of the patrol, just a local patrol. And then I did another one with C Company, with Major Arnott. Major McBain, who was C Company commander. They were not up on the front line. They were a little bit further back, and I had to do one with him. So I went helicopter out with HF equipment. To keep, because the distance, the A-42s wouldn't work back to battalion quarters, and did a patrol with him as well.
And what did that? This, in a sense, would be a kind of fighting patrol. I mean, you're up in an area where you could make contact, couldn't you?
That's right. The signal, regimental signals, didn't go out with. Company, the platoons, they had their own signals. If a signal, regimental signal went out, he went out with the company commander. And
you were regimental signals.
I was regimental signals, yeah. So we were employed at company level. very rarely a platoon level. So I went out with Major McBain down at the Nibong. So it was a company patrol, a company fighting patrol. And because there was no communication direct to battalion headquarters, although there was communications from the company headquarters back to company base, but because we were further out, no communications, so that would be a HF, which was voice and Morse code. And you would get out, I mean, you would use various aerials. And I found when I was in the jungle, you had to have a space to put up, depending on what megahertz you were working on, and what you so depending on the size of your aerial, and especially at night time. But I found that, and I can't for the life of me remember what this particular aerial I used, but it didn't need so much space. And what I did, I got I found a rock, tied a piece of a string on it, flung it over a tree, hoisted it up, and it was in like a C shape. And I say, I can't remember for the life of me. It did have a name, what type of one it was, but it was directional. And that, I found out, obviously, with working out what my grid reference was, and also I've got the compass, I've got a compass bearing on battalion headquarters, put the aerial up, and as I said, it was directional, faced it towards where the battalion headquarters was, and I got communication straight away. So I got a pat on the back from Major McBain for that. So, because the other one, which was a T-shaped aerial, it wasn't working so well. So you've got to try various aerials to get communications, and that was one of the things. That was the difference between regimental signals and platoon signals, because they didn't do the HF side.
Were platoons able to communicate with each other?
On a patrol, yes.
You could actually talk platoon to platoon.
If you were on the same frequency, you could talk platoon to platoon. You didn't need a base.
What about section? Was there any communication at section level?
The section levels, you had small radios, but they were fairly rubbish. So if they went out, it had to be... you didn't have... Section to section, it wasn't that bad, but it was section to platoon level. That was to the platoon commander. That was imperative, because you four sections out with your platoons, and of course then you had your platoon back to. But you could have what they call multicultural anyway. You could have them everybody on the same, apart from the sections. The sections didn't, because the sections didn't have the A42 radios.
Well, did they just have the handheld radio?
There were small A40 type radios. I didn't have much to do with them, because we were the big boys.
You'd be working with, in this case, Major Arnott.
Major McBain, yeah. But I was mainly working back at battalion headquarters. We had another radio operator with us, regimental signaller, who was Major McBain's personal radio operator, working back to company headquarters, and of course from company headquarters back to battalion headquarters. So we had two radio links. I didn't ask. I just did that, and I was so I came back. So I did that with Major McBain. I was only there for a short while, for that, purely for that
what
patrol.
What kind of, if it's possible, what kind of signals would be, you know, communication would you would be dealing with in that situation?
In that situation, it was in case we required aircraft, because we also had another radio with us, called a Saab, and that was direct communications
with
the aircraft. Yeah.
So you're pretty well covered. I mean, you could bring assistance down.
Oh yes.
What about artillery? And did you have artillery support?
We did at each company base, not battalion headquarters, but we had a artillery with battalion headquarters, but at each company headquarters, because later on we took over another. Because B Company at that time didn't have Plum and Mappo. It was only because that was Plum and Mappo. It got hit by it got attacked by Indonesian regular troops when the paratroopers were there. I don't know which battalion it was. Then a Scottish battalion took over, and we took over from them. So we had three company bases then. I still can't remember what A Company was called, where A Company was, but B Company was a Plum and Mappo later on. But each one we had a 105mm howitzer, and that was manned by 29 Commando Company Royal Artillery. So we had those, but we were still really outgunned by the Indonesians. The biggest gun they had was a 175mm howitzer, which was a Russian gun, but that was well back. But they outranged us. If we later on, when we had when we used to go over into Indonesia, we had to bring the howitzers up into a forward position to give us that bit of extra cover. And of course, we in each company base, we had mortar platoon and mortar base plate. So we had the mortar platoon was split into the different company bases. So there was that cover as well.
Did they carry out, in the company bases, did they carry out a nightly shoot or something like that towards the Indonesian position? Or they thought it was Indonesian position?
Yes, they did. They used to have, there were certain areas, and they used to do a 105mm, used to fire certain fire missions. But not only was it for that, it was also for platoons, because in those days we didn't have GPS.
What was GPS?
GPS is satellite communications, and it gave you, like they have now, the GPS is what they have now. It tells them where they are. In those days it was a map and compass, and you couldn't see the stars when you were in the jungle. It was old-fashioned way of finding your way around. For instance, via tracks. A lot of the part of Borneo, where nobody had ever been there. They'd never been discovered, a lot of it. A lot of the maps of Borneo were blank. So when a patrol went out, it was a case of map and compass. Another way of platoons of when they were out in the jungle was actually if they were lost or if they were unsure of their positions, they would bring down a fire mission. They would ask for a fire mission, and when the shell landed, they picked up that position. And they were able to work out where they were on the map. Although we had an unfortunate accident, in that a particular platoon commander called for a fire mission from the mortars, not from the artillery, from the mortars, because to find out exactly where he was, and he nearly called it down on himself.
I was going to say, pretty dangerous kind of thing to ask for. Where would the shell land? You know, you'd have to work out the position where you wanted it.
Yeah,
land, you
know. And what they do is they don't fire a full mission; they fire one. And it's put it a good way, because when a fire mission is given out, then the artillery and the mortars know exactly where that's going to fall. So when a mortar shell landed, you know, they worked out from there where they were. Pretty good.
So you did this this business with C Company.
Yep.
And other than that, you were back in battalion headquarters.
Came back to battalion headquarters, and I there was another patrol going out, and I immediately volunteered for it. And I must admit, I didn't like being in battalion headquarters. Even though we were on active service, battalion headquarters was still a bit regimented. It was that way. And so when I got the chance to go out on another patrol, I did. So we went up to particular patrol, and we were clearing a landing zone. And when you clear a landing zone, you don't go up with electronic equipment. Electronic equipment didn't always pick it all up. It was actually the old, what you see on the old pictures, it's a bayonet pulling in the ground. And we were supposed to be out for
looking for mines,
clearing a helicopter zone. And we were supposed to be out for, I don't know, I think it was 4 days, 5 days. Anyway, when we were going out, that was it. Platoon sergeant, who's a friend of mine now, he's supposed to move at the slowest pace of the signaller, which was me. And it really did push it. And I made a complaint, and that we made that much noise, we could have been ambushed. And I made it official. One, that we were moving far too fast, because I, as the signaller, had the biggest amount of weight, and we made too much noise. And when we got back, I was called in by my platoon commander. That's why I was back so early, because he was expecting me, and I said, speak to the platoon sergeant and the platoon commander. I'm making an official complaint, isn't that? We made too much noise, we were too quick, they didn't take into consideration the signaller. At that time, the platoon commander was the one who was actually seconded to us, because the platoon commander of that platoon had actually been wounded. When
do you remember his name at all?
The officer that got wounded.
Not both of them,
either. Well, no. Eustace. Oh, was it? I think it was Eustace. I think it was Captain or Lieutenant Eustace. I think it was Lieutenant Eustace. He got wounded.
So anyway, you made the complaint.
I made the complaint because the officer that was seconded was from the Royal Marines. I made a complaint, and I also, if I remember right, I think Colonel Morton was involved as well, because this platoon had actually been in a big firefight with the Indonesians before, and I came out of there, and after my complaint, I said, you're now going up to B Company. There's a helicopter going up to B Company, Lama Matmo, and would like you to go up on there. So I ended up with Plumbing Mapo, with Major Crawford, who was the company commander, and the signaller over there was a bloke called Pete. That's Pete's second name. I can't remember Pete's second name at the moment. It'll come to me though. So I ended up there as a second command in charge of a rifle section.
So you weren't a signaller up there, you were
I was still a signaller. I was second in command of the signal section.
I see, the signal section.
The signal section with Major Crawford. Mm-hmm. And then I did one more patrol, but again, we as the regiment of signals didn't go out with rifle companies, with rifle platoons. We went out when the company commander went out. So I did another one with Major Crawford, which was just after the Sukarno was overthrown by Suharto. And everything quietened down for a while. I was up there for about three or four months, and it was more relaxed. It really was a relaxed atmosphere. The sergeant major was a bloke called Bob Pedman, smashing sergeant major. And Pete, the signals corporal, we were all friends anyway, so we had a great time. And he needed someone else up there, and I took over as second in command of the signals.